AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
And we are live. SB Talks Push Out with Real Takes Over Fake Debates. Sorry about the longer intro than usual. You know, TD. You just say TD for a second. But the show don't stop. We're going to keep rolling. Sean, it's Friday. How you doing today, brother?
Doing good, SB. Happy holidays, everyone out there. Hope y'all are enjoying the holiday season, whatever you're doing. Hope you're just enjoying it. And thank you for taking the moment to check us out on Real Takes Over Fake Debates.
100%. They would take us out. Sorry for you guys. Missed the show of Monday. SB has been under the weather for the past couple of weeks. And if y'all haven't seen anything, SB has been under the weather, but we back in action. And we're going to get the stuff that you like from us, from me and Sean, our takes and everything. We got a lot of things to talk about in today's episode, Sean. But, you know, we got to start the show with some breaking news, sad breaking news at that, but we got a drop. Legendary sportcaster Greg Gumbel dies at the late age of 78 years old. Prayers to the Gumbel family. Sean, what's your reaction to this news?
Oh, very, you know, obviously very surprised to hear the news. I understood he had been battling cancer for some time. And so certainly, you hate to hear the passing of someone, but, you know, from a certain perspective, you're always, you know, happy to know that they're no longer suffering and, you know, with whatever they may be dealing with, if they've been dealing with a long illness. But Greg Gumbel, you know, is a pioneer. I know we use that term probably too loosely, but he was a pioneer. He was the first, African-American announcer to call play-by-play for a major sports championship when he called Super Bowl 35, mm-hmm. In 2001. And, you know, so, you know, when you think about that type of stuff, but also just his ability to balance being not just someone who could call games, but also someone who would host studio shows. So he hosted, obviously, their NCAA tournament, March Madness, with Charles and Kenny and Clark Kellogg and, obviously worked on the CBS, NFL on CBS show as well. Mm-hmm. Oh, just a versatile, very versatile sports broadcaster, but always very classy, never afraid to laugh and enjoy what he was doing. And so certainly, sad news, but, you know, just prayers to, you know, his family and those who work with him. And you never heard a bad word said about Greg Gumbel because he was just truly a class act.
Coming in like the sports world, like you said, Greg Gumbel was like, that's a legendary name. And I know in like the day age that we're in now, we do just throw around like the pioneer name, but no, he's definitely one of the forefathers of pushing that great. He was in like around that time, him and the other guy who passed away, name is forgetting me, the other great sportcast who passed. They had him at the he had the war show right before he had that.
Stuart Scott.
He's like in that era, like, cause we in the debate era. During that era, like real sportcasts, when you come on, they treat it like the news highlights. That was like the purity of sportcasting. I know we kind of get lost in like the debate hot take era, but sometimes, and I ain't gonna lie, Sean, you tell me if I'm wrong, I think in the sports world, I think we actually like missing it a little bit. I think we missed like that the root of what sportcasting used to be. I think that would be probably a breath of fresh air in the era that we in now. And if that was to come back again, I think you know, he's one of the guys you got to tip your hat to when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, SB, I think when you're talking about the age of, and I use journalism in air quotes, that we're in, that age has certainly changed. Greg Gumbel being, you know, from the age where it was about true journalism, it was about substance over the salacious. Yep. And we've now switched the other way where the salacious is more palatable than the substance, which is not good. And obviously we talked about that just in doing what we do here on Real Takes Over Fake Debates, hence the title. But I think there's a, you know, there's always going to be a certain appetite for the Greg Gumbels of the world, for the Ernie Johnsons of the world, for those who truly, you know, just want to practice journalism. And you know, and again, I don't want to browbeat that other thing because that's not really what this is about. But I do think when you talk about Greg Gumbel, the first thing you talk about is his professionalism, his credibility. If he said it, it wasn't because he was trying to be noticed. He was reporting it because he believed that the audience should know what's going on and be truthful in that. So, you know, I think that's the age that I hope maybe we will get back to that, at least to a degree. But, you know, it's really hard to say that we'll ever get truly back to that because that's just not where things are right now.
It's too long. Everybody want to, because it's all about the problem. But the main problem that we have, Sean, is that everybody cares about being the first person to drop something. And I'm wanting my opinion to feel right and yours wrong. You see how I said, not saying I was right for my opinion. I want my opinion has to be right over your opinion. We ain't even talking facts. My opinion has to be right over yours. I'm proving my opinion. That's what a problem that we have more than anything. But speaking of getting to opinions, because I have a very harsh opinion on this one. I don't know, should I drop the breaking news sound again for this one too?
You might as well.
Okay, might as well. Okay, we got to talk about this because this I have a very. Oh, another breaking news. Sad news come out in the NBA. Sacramento Kings have decided to walk away from or fire Coach Mike Brown. Obviously, they're on a 5-game losing streak right now. If you look at where they are in the NBA standings right now, they are at the bottom of the Western Conference. I didn't click that button. I want the exact record. I'm sorry. Give me 1 second, Sean. The Kings record right now, they are 13-8. They're on a 5-game losing streak. They are 12th right now in the Western Conference. Sean, this is my problem, right? How do you fire your coach and don't fire the GM? Because if anybody should have been left go first on the Sacramento Kings, it should have been the GM. A couple years ago, the Sacramento Kings had an outstanding season, shocked everybody, and was at the top of the West. So, knowing that your team is good, you always got to improve. And if you don't improve your team, what will happen? You pretty much get worse. If you stay stagnant, you get worse. Point blank, period. The Sacramento Kings did nothing. Then, coming into this offseason, you add a player within DeMar DeRozan who clearly didn't fit your scheme or what your team really needed, because all DeMar DeRozan, which we talked about before the show, the point that you brought up, Sushan, that you brought in DeMar DeRozan. And you don't need DeMar DeRozan because all DeMar DeRozan is going to bring is shot creation, and you got that in Malik Monk already. So there's no point in bringing that. You fire Mike Brown, and the problem with this team is the roster. That's the only thing. You let Harrison Barnes walk. He was a good fit with this team. Mike Brown had this team in great positions before then. I just think this is a badly built roster, and the coach is getting the bad end of the stick for how the team was put together, if you ask me. I don't like this move at all. Mike Brown didn't deserve to be fired. It's the G. If anybody should have been fired, it should have been the GM, if you ask me. But go ahead, Sean.
So, SB, I think we obviously know we've been doing this long enough to understand that whenever a team is struggling, from the viewpoint of the front office, ownership, whatever, somebody's going to take the fall, and it's generally not going to be a player.
Nope.
It's always going to be a coach. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was obviously Mike Brown being let go. He's there for just over two seasons. The first season he was there, remember, the Kings had not been to the playoffs before he got there since 2006.
That's a long time.
It was like a 16-year playoff drought. He comes in, helps to provide some stability. Fox and Sabonis, obviously, you know, are all-star level players. They get great production from Malik Monk, get great production from their role players and Harrison Barnes and Kevin Herter and others. And, you know, they, you know, essentially, you know, go to the playoffs and they lose in the first round, but everybody says, okay, the future's bright when you look at their core, you know, their core guys. And then, as you mentioned, SB, they didn't do anything after that first round exit to upgrade the roster. Okay, you want to run it back? Oh, okay. But everybody else around you is making moves and trying to improve their roster, and you're not doing that. So I think that's part of the problem. But I think the other piece of it is, and I don't know who necessarily made the call. A lot of times when a coach gets fired, it's ownership saying to the front office, and in this case, Monty McNair, the GM, do something. And the do something is often fire the coach. You just gave Mike Brown an extension this offseason and a pay raise this offseason that took him to the 26-27 season. So he's supposed to be your coach at least through 2027. And you essentially say no. And part of it is because you realize you had a really good coach. But also, again, to your point, SB, they brought in DeMar DeRozan. And I thought, okay, this is not a bad move, but I did think there needed to be a subsequent move bringing in DeRozan, because to me, the roster just wasn't completely balanced. And also, what role is DeRozan going to play? Because if DeRozan is willing to be someone who say, hey, I'm willing to sacrifice, I'm willing to be a little more off the ball, because I understand we got De'Aaron Fox. Sabonis is a big-time playmaker, averages 8 assists a game. The ball's going to be in his hands. I got to figure out how to play off of these guys, and I will figure it out to help this team win. If that wasn't the mentality coming in, then I don't think DeRozan was necessarily the smart move for them. And also, you still had, you know, the continued improvement of Keegan Murray, who you spent a top four pick on, who by a lot of accounts is a really good young player and still ascending in his career. So I just think the roster, to your point, SB, was not really well put together outside of those guys. And again, they don't play with a lot of size. They don't have what I like to call the non-stats all-star. The non-stats all-star is who's the guy who goes in and provides a lot for the team, but it's not going to always show up in the box score. The Shane Battiers of the world, the Tony Allens of the world. You got to have those type of players if you really want to be a truly, really good team and a competitive team. And I look at their team, they don't really have that, in my view. So getting rid of Mike Brown is not going to fix the problem. And ultimately, and obviously now, the reactive nature is going to be, well, what's going to happen with De'Aaron Fox? There are people going to say, well, Mike Brown criticized De'Aaron Fox last night after the game. And if you watch the final play, the criticism was deserved. Right. But also, he was at practice today. Mike Brown ran practice today. He's talking to De'Aaron Fox at practice today. They're talking. They're having – so they didn't seem like they had a bad relationship or anything like that. So – but obviously, Fox hasn't signed an extension yet, and there's questions about what's going to happen with him, what he's ultimately going to do. We don't know. Are they in teardown mode? I don't think that's their thought at all. I think their thought is smart. They want to get a new voice. Whether they're right or not remains to be seen, and we'll see what happens. But I just think, again, to your point, SB, it was not a smart move on their part to fire Mike Brown. I don't think their problems are Mike Brown. I think their problems are roster construction, first and foremost.
Because looking at it, it's just like, what do you gain for getting rid of Mike Brown? Also, Doug Christie is stepping in as an interim head coach.
Yes.
By the way. So it's like, is Doug Christie going to come in and just voice just hit a switch and change it back around? I highly doubt it. It's at the end of the day, you got to look at your roster for me. And I doubt that De'Aaron Fox went behind the scenes after being called out and said, hey, yeah, get rid of Mike Brown. Now, I highly doubt that De'Aaron Fox character never has shown that in no part of his career. So it's like, because like I said, you get rid of Mike Brown, now what? You still got
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Same problems. You still got no size. You still got something going on with DeMar DeRozan, who was not going to change his game, who won his shot when he won his shot. So now you got y'all running a slow pace. You run a slow pace offense with a fast-paced team. Because at the end of the day, you just needed a guy. What? You got the roles. You need a guy to create a shot. You got that in Malik Monk. And De'Aaron Fox is already developing that. So it's like, and he's got way better at that too, by the way, I should say. I think you got to look in the mirror as a GM and stop using the coach as a scapegoat and say, I'm looking at this roster. I did a bad job. It don't fit together. And it just make it as simple as that. And that'll make it so much easier. But we still don't, since we're on the NBA, obviously Christmas has passed. We got an NFL NBA beef when it comes to the Christmas Day stuff. LeBron James taking a slight jab at the NFL after the game. A good game, probably the best Christmas game that was played, the Warriors versus the Lakers. And the Lakers came out with the win. Austin Reeves with the game winner. LeBron James at the end post-game interview said, hey, NFL, Christmas is our day. Now, Sean, I got a little thing to show you here. From what these ratings look like, it looked like Christmas Day belonged to the NFL on this Wednesday. Both games brought up to 24 million views in. That's only on Netflix, by the way. Only on Netflix. Netflix. The NBA... Knicks Spurs 4.5 million, the 76ers 5 million, Timberwolves 4, the Lakers and the Warriors, which got in the most views, 7, and then the Nuggets did 3 million. Now, Deshaun, this is the problem that LeBron has to understand and the NBA has to understand. They do have a problem on hand. But first, before we get into what the problem on hand, what was your reaction to LeBron's comments, and was LeBron wrong?
I mean, we traditionally associate Christmas Day with the NBA.
Yeah.
Right. Just like we associate Thanksgiving with the NFL.
Yep.
But sometimes you get Marlowe. And what I mean by get Marlowe is the NBA has built up Christmas Day. You know, they built up Christmas Day, and Marlowe came in, and Marlowe being the NFL, and came in and said, well, now you done built it all up. We need it.
We need it.
And that's literally what happened. So the NBA got Marlowe, and sometimes you get Marlowe. Now, the NBA also understands, and this is where I think where the conversation gets interesting, right? The NFL games at this stage of the season have far more importance than the NBA games at this stage of the season.
That is true.
So the stakes were there. So I believe that's part of why when you saw the games that were on and some of the numbers is those games all had playoff implications. And those games then also had three marquee quarterbacks and Sierra's husband. So at the end of the day.
Ah, you wild.
I'm just being honest. You know, I'm just being honest. Not a marquee quarterback anymore. He's just not that anymore. Still a decent quarterback, but just not marquee at this point. Okay. I'm being honest. It's just what it is. Let's just call it what it is. you know, Denver's paying them $85 million not to play for them. That's so I'm just leaving that at that. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the NFL knew what it was doing when it made the schedule. The NFL understood what it was doing by putting those teams on Christmas Day and also having those teams play in other games on Saturday. They understood what they were doing. And the NBA, if you notice, SB, what time was the Lakers-Warriors game was later.
Later.
It was after the NFL games. That wasn't an accident.
Oh, mm-mm.
That wasn't an accident. So, you know, and I think people really have to understand that the NFL is the king. They're the big dog. The numbers show it. They're the big dog. Now, the second part of it is the quality of the games. The NBA games, from a competitive standpoint, were better than the NFL games from a competitive standpoint. The Chiefs Steelers game was pretty competitive, and then by like midway through the third quarter, it started okay. Like, yeah, it's clear Steelers not winning this game.
That Timberwolves game wasn't competitive. I give you that Knicks and Spurs and that Lakers and Warriors carried.
Lakers and Warriors was competitive, and even the Nuggets Suns game was, you know, fairly. Man. I mean, it wasn't like a, you know, but the point is that just from an overall competitive standpoint, the NBA games were more competitive than the NFL game. But here's where the lines are drawn. The NFL does have to fix this issue. And this issue is if the short week games cannot be this bad.
Yeah.
All right. We just saw two games on Christmas Day that again, that Texans game wasn't even competitive. Ravens, no. Mm-hmm. And obviously we talked about the Steelers and the Chiefs. But then we saw a Thursday night game last night, where the score was 9-6.
Chicago's trash.
These short week games they got to figure out a way to fix these short week games, particularly if you're going to put short week games on holidays and marquee days. The Thanksgiving Day games weren't very good. Now, the Bears-Lions game got good in the second half.
Yes, it did.
But it didn't start out that way. The Cowboys-Giants game was a mess. The Dolphins Packers game was a mess on Thanksgiving. All these teams playing on short weeks, they're gonna have to figure this out. And particularly again, if you're gonna have these games on holidays and you want, you know, to really own the viewership of those games, they gotta figure that out. But that said, Christmas, it was your day. It is no longer your day. Because the NFL ain't going nowhere. Again, you got Marlo. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, it was 6-3. Oh, 6-3. I'm sorry. It was 6-3.
Oh, yeah, 9-6. I knew it was like, thank you. 6-3. Yeah, it was no scoring. So, you know, so that's a problem.
Try to just subscribe, Victor J, too, by the way. LeBron, and this would have probably come in where Christmas ain't your day no more. The NBA depended on a 40-year-old man and a 36-year-old another man, who one guy is 1 year away from retirement and the other guy's probably 2 to 3 years away from retirement, and understand that. You depended on that. So what are you going to do when the NFL like Sean brought up a good point. They're going to fix that formula now. Because now they went from, like, if Christmas Day was on our day, we're going to play on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You know, we're going to have a Christmas game. Now they had a mask. They don't care if Christmas on a Tuesday. They're going to play. So the NFL is going to fix their formula. And when they fix their formula, you know who you're going to see? And so instead of, like, they fixed the formula now, it probably would have been, like, Lions versus Eagles. Ravens, that Ravens game versus Chiefs game that was early in the season, oh, that would have been on Christmas Day. So now what you going to do when you got one of the two best offenses in the league playing each other on one side, and you got two of the best quarterbacks playing each other on the other side? Oh, no, let's even make it better. Let's give a rivalry in. Let's go Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes. Oh, now during this whole time we building up, we bringing back all the playoff battles that they had. What are you going to do then? Now, and then also during that time, you got no LeBron, no Steph Curry, no KD. Who are you going to put on the screen to save y'all? Bad enough to play, and people are already complaining about the play. So it's like, NBA, what are you going to do? when the stars that you depend on in the NBA put themselves in a bad situation, the older stars that you depend on are gone. What are you going to do? Because the NFL is built off team. People will still watch the game no matter who on the field because it's about the team. Bears fans watch the game. Still bad. It's about the team. Only time they care about the player on the football field, I'm going to be honest with you, is the quarterback. Who is their quarterback? They don't care if Patrick Mahomes got Kareem Hunt, Pacheco, or Sean Webb behind them. They're going to tune in and watch that game. So NBA versus NFL Christmas is going to get real shaky for the NBA, and the NBA going to have to fix a lot of things.
I would say this as be really quick, just to that point, add to that point. Next year, Christmas Day falls on a Thursday. Mm-hmm. The NFL already has Thursday Night Football. Mm-hmm. I think it's very possible you're going to see three Christmas Day games next year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here's where I think they're going to have to figure this thing out. At a certain point, you're going to have to add another bye week for these teams.
Yes.
At a certain point, you're going to have to.
Or make it later in the season.
Or you're going to have to do something. Mm-hmm. One of the talks is if they add an 18th regular season game, which I think we're going to get eventually, as much as we don't want it or need it, we're going to get that 18th regular season game. Make week 13 a bye for all. There's no NFL. No NFL games. Put the Pro Bowl the week of week 13 where you had a Pro Bowl games. So basically, and again, we know the program what games is, you know, it's the dodgeball and the flag football and the skills competition. Mm-hmm. It's not the contact stuff. So come week 14, all your teams are back playing. So by the time you get to that, and each team has also had their normal bye week, and then you move the Super Bowl to President's Day weekend in February, because President's Day is technically a holiday, even though technically the NBA has All-Star weekend that weekend. Mm-hmm. But if you move the Super Bowl to that weekend, the NBA got to make an adjustment.
Oh, All-Star game over with. It's over with.
So I think that's what we need to see at some point. But they have got to make sure these guys are not robots. Three games in 11 days is way too much. You can't – the body doesn't have enough time to recover from that. Yeah. And so that's why I think some of the quality of the games are not great. And also you just don't have the requisite preparation for these games, particularly with travel and everything else that goes on that you would normally have. So I think there's got to be some thought process around how do you make the games on the marquee days – quality, because again, when you make the schedule, we think, okay, these will be some good matches. We knew Texans and Ravens going to be a good matchup just because they just met in the playoffs last year in the divisional round, and they got two marquee quarterbacks.
Yep.
But the attrition of playing all those games in that short time frame, I think you saw it caught up on Christmas Day. But they've been seeing this on Thursday Night Football as the season progresses, anyway, and that's a big part of the problem.
Yeah. Hey, and shout out to Wu. She said if the NFL was on regular season, they would have destroyed the NBA. The crazy part about it is the NBA is gaslighting us to say, like, yeah, this is one of the best rated games we had in the last 5 years. The NFL whooped them, bro. Whooped them, bro. And only on Netflix only. So imagine if they was on regular TV too. Oh, yeah, no, they wouldn't have had a chance. They wouldn't have had – I would have probably been – would have switched back to the games when the NFL went on commercial every time. That's probably the only time. I'm dead serious. But, Sean – the NBA does have a problem. It ain't just the NFL going on Christmas Day. That's one, because they're just adding on more and more problems. But the NBA does truly have a problem while the ratings being down. Is it three-pointer, competition, ownership, player mobility? I got the perfect formula to fix the NBA. All right, number one. And I'm not saying this because y'all are – just these snipers shooting three-point guys, because we've seen the game where y'all miss 75 threes. But we got to move the three-point line back. move it back further so we can get rid of the analytics telling people that taking the three is better than the midi. So now we're going to move the three-point line back. So unless you're one of those elite snipers, I still want to move back further enough where we still got like the corner three, but I think if it's even a couple inches more back, make it even deep because everybody don't supposed to be shooting them super deep threes. Move the three-point line back so we can get more inside action. Also, we need to penalize the refs for being over-controlling on the game. We get unnecessary techs, unnecessary ejections, false calls. So I think the refs should just how players get penalized. And fine, I think refs should start doing that too. Because I seen this year a player got a tech by telling him, hey, yelling at the ref to get him to understand there's something on the floor that they were trying to avoid getting injured. You know what I'm saying? Get the spill off the floor. I think the refs need to control. We need to bring back team fandom because it's too much player and team fandom and team rivalry. It's too much individual player fandom. So it's like it's 82 game season. Your favorite player not gonna play all 82 games, Sean. But now if you only watch this team for one person, and every say if a guy, your favorite player Joel Embiid. So pretty much you only gonna watch half the season because if Joel Embiid ain't playing, I'm not watching. So we got to bring back team fandom, where people get people to be fans of the team no matter what. And a part of the reason what you can do it.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Is you need to drop the salary of if you leave the team that you currently on max contract. I think that will help it more. Like, so if you, I don't know how much the percentage is dropping out. I think it should be lower. Lower the max contract salary if you go to another team. We got to try to keep guys in the same situation with the same team so we can get these rivalries, so we get people to be fans of the team consistently. I think that's a start, and I don't know what else you could really do to add on to that, but I think bringing back true rivalry, two team rivalries, and team fandom, that'll be another step. Also, we got to end this come from the team part, the championship of bus legacy logic. And the reason why I say the championship of bus legacy logic, because that opened the door to player mobility. And we have seen players who did the player mobility thing and ruin their legacy or make a sacrifice for some reason, like a James Harden, because they told me if he don't win no championship, his legacy is bust, even though James Harden's a top five shooting guard of all time. So I think we should still give players credit for the work that they put in like we used to do. So now a guy could stay where he at, and I want to win here. And then maybe at the tail end, I should try. Instead of saying, hey, man, you really didn't want to win, and you just stayed here for the money. No, I think we need to end the championship of bus logic. Also, we need to end the too much help, not enough help logic, because if the NBA really want a true face of the league right now, and I'm not saying this because Jason Tatum is my favorite player in the league, it should be Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum has been competing at a championship level since he came into the league. He's one of the best scorers in the league. His team has been at the top of the league for the longest of all time. But the problem that he's not getting enough credit for what he has done is because they say he has too much help, which is not even fair to him. And you have somebody the next breath to tell me LeBron James or Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time, especially Michael Jordan, like he didn't have Scottie Pippen next to him, who was an all-first NBA player, an all-first defensive player. Then he had Dennis Rodman as the greatest rebounder of all time, and nobody never told him he had too much help. You had Shaq and Kobe, known as one of the greatest players of all time, and they both played with each other, and they had a nice, solid teammates around them. And then also, I want to end that not enough help logic, too, where it's like, where a guy, you making excuses, or why a guy's losing because he's not enough. I think we should just end the not help logic. We got to end that all, because then we can actually truly appreciate a guy for what he is doing right in front of us. And last but not least, build and protect new stars. I thought the whole point of the NBA is out with the old, in with the new. The NBA has always been like that. Always been like that. We just seen players like Jamal Crawford show he still had the ability to play. Dropped like 50 on one of his last couple games. The league got about him because the young guys need to play. Why are y'all still pushing LeBron, Curry, and all these guys? You need to force feed us all these new stars. We shouldn't even be worried about LeBron, Steph, KD, AD. You should be pushing Ant. When Ja did it to himself on Ja, so I had to Ja different story. Ant-Man, Tatum, the Lucas, the Giannis's. You need to push these guys in the forefront. Force feed them to the people. And then also, I hate to say it, and maybe this will help more like a guy like an Ant-Man. We might need to – I know Adam Silver has been on that. I want every team to compete, every team be good. But maybe if you got to get a new star, you might have to force feed and force build a big market team. I think another – to get a true star, you need to go throw them in New York. And I'm not saying this because I'm a Bulls fan. Throw them in Chicago. Maybe in L.A. You have to – if you truly want to start, it's going to carry this league. When LeBron, Steph, and them go, you got to build up another big market team. So my end formula is move the three-point line back, penalize the refs, bring back true team fandom rivalry, and a championship of bust knock on people legacy, and that too much help so you can stop criticizing players. Build and protect your new stars and also force feed a big market team so you can get your star. That's my formula, Sean. I think that will fix the NBA.
So, SB, I think that's a very interesting list. I won't comment on everything that you said because, again, that's a separate podcast in itself.
We can do another episode on it. We can bring it back.
But I think there are a couple things to seriously think about. The NBA problems did not start yesterday. In my humbled opinion, they started 32 years ago. What happened 32 years ago? 32 years ago, we had the Dream Team.
Oh.
The NBA, I think, became very much obsessed with becoming international, which you can't blame the NBA for that. Mm-hmm. Right? And there were going to be some great benefits to that. I think the problem became over time, and again, it was not overnight. This was very gradual, that the more the league focused on becoming international, the less it focused on being a part of player development at the youth level all the way up.
I'm cooking right now. I like this.
I believe that's a massive part of why we are where we are today. So when I say it didn't happen yesterday, it didn't happen yesterday. It started all the way back with the Dream Team. But the Dream Team themselves are not to blame for this. So I want to make sure, because I know, you know, people will watch a clip or listen to 30 seconds of what I'm saying. I am not blaming the Dream Team for it. Mm-hmm. I am saying that the NBA, because of the success of the Dream Team and because of what David Stern and the league wanted, they wanted to grow into the international market. There was nothing wrong with that, mm-hmm. but not at the expense of the American game, the American basketball player, the youth. And again, I think the more it did that, the less the focus became about being involved with the development of players at the youth level all the way up.
So you think they internationalized the American sport? We need to go back to American style.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you could have done both, but sometimes rather than giving both things their due diligence, there was a great deal of, we got to get to the international thing. We got to penetrate this international market. We got to get into Europe. We got to get into China. We got to get in that. And again, I understand that. That's business. But the other side is that in a lot of ways, there might not have been a great focus on how do we make sure that we're a part of the development of young players coming up who are ultimately going to be the future of our league. Mm-hmm. I think there, because again, for a large portion of it, it was always, oh, we got great high school programs. We got great college programs. We're getting guys from these great college programs that are coming in with their pre-developed stardom, right? Because again, they can go all the way back. I go all the way back with that one. But you think about Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, their stardom started at the high school level locally, but when they were mega stars in college.
Yes.
At Indiana State and at Michigan State. So when they come in the NBA, the NBA doesn't have to make them stars. They're already coming in with a certain stardom and a certain cachet. And they're in markets that are opposite of the country. And we can go into all the laundry list of reasons why that happened. But I do believe that the NBA, in the interest of becoming more international, wasn't as, and I want to be very careful, wasn't as involved with development of youth who were ultimately going to be a big part of the future of the NBA. So what we're seeing is, I think, just over time, it's gotten to a place where now we're having the issues that we're having. And these issues, again, they've been slow building. It didn't happen overnight. It's slow building. And I do think the slow build, now we're seeing the results of it, and now we're seeing the NBA say, well, hey, what can we do? Well, it's not going to start, to me, with just fixing the current issues in the NBA. You got to get back to youth basketball. You know, in Europe, for example, you can't coach unless you're certified.
Oh, really?
No, you can't coach on any level. You got to be certified.
So on any level?
You know, on any level. You cannot coach unless you are certified. So, you know, we got to get back to, you know, again, what are these coaches teaching? You know, how are we teaching individual development within the concept of what teams are doing that will relate, not just at the AAU level and at the high school level, but also if you decide to go to college, at the college level and even at the pro level? I think there's got to be some, it can't just be the NBA just fixing that. There's got to be, across the board, they have to look at where is basketball right now from a development standpoint, youth all the way through, because that's where it starts. You know, it starts when, you know, at that youth level, and we've gotten away from that. And I think that's where there's a longer conversation to be had, but I do think that there's not enough of that, you know, talked about. And it's, again, it's only going to get, I think, crazier with the continued emergence of NIL and, you know, young kids, male and female, but now we're talking about the NBA. So males who, you know, are now able to monetize, you know, their abilities at, you know, the amateur level, which, again, nothing wrong with that. But again, is that ultimately helping them develop their individual abilities to come in and say, hey, can you work with the team concept? People talk, and I'm going to use Michael Jordan because, again, I see him right behind you, so I'm going to use Michael Jordan as an example. Michael Jordan at North Carolina had to play within the structure of what Gene Smith wanted. It wasn't that he didn't have freedom, but it's within the structure of what the team, for the team. So when he comes in the NBA, yeah, he's this great individual talent, but he does know how to play in a system. Mm-hmm. How many kids are actually getting a chance to do that? That's helping them when they get to the next level? Or are we just saying, hey, yeah, you got this great individual skill set. We just want you to go out there and shoot 15 threes. You know, you shoot 15 threes a game. And as long as you do that, we're fine, because the analytics say do that. So I think it's a big issue. There's a lot to talk about, but I do believe we got to get back to the youth level first. Yep. And especially from a coaching and development perspective of, yes, great individual talent, but this is not a one-on-one game. No. You know, so I think we got to get back to that.
Chad, it's harder too, because what we've been talking about, glad you brought NIL. Because now if you do that, the player's going to be like, well, I'm going to leave then. I'm just going to leave. And that's another problem that they have. Now I feel like people are, I ain't going to even say scared to be coached. People are avoiding to be coached now. But also, I believe coaches are scared to coach now. When we talk about not NBA level, because NBA, your job, well, I ain't going to say your job secure, because that would be petty to say after we just said Mike Brown got fired. But about your job security, your player security, because you can lose players easily like that within a year, any other thing. But speaking of that, since you were talking about that, and I actually like your point about the international American guy. Jim Larranega is stepping down. He is the Miami Hurricanes, was the Miami Hurricanes basketball coach. Listen to why he's stepping down, Sean.
I've tried every which way to keep this going. And I know I'm going to be asked a lot of questions, but I want to answer them before I'm even asked. What shocked me beyond belief was after we made it to the Final Four just 18 months ago, the very first time I met with the players, eight of them decided they were going to put their name in the portal and leave. I said, don't you like it yet? No, I love it. I love Miami. It's great. But the opportunity to make money someplace else created a situation that you have to begin to ask yourself as a coach, what is this all about?
All right, Sean. That was from coach himself. I'll let you take the lead on this one. What you got? Because I got something to say about
it. So let me speak about it from two perspectives. So from the coaching perspective, there's a part of me that does understand what he's talking about. But cry me a river. You knew that this was coming. Mm-hmm. This was always coming. Mm-hmm. You didn't prepare for this. Mm-hmm. You're a coach. Your job is to prepare. Mm-hmm. That's part of the job. So I understand from an older school perspective of we just had this run. You would think kids and guys would want to come back because we just went on this run. The days of University of Florida 2006, 2007 are that's a bygone age. Mm-hmm. This is the age of what can you do to keep me? What can you do to retain me? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it's you know, listen, if you're a college basketball player and you just went on a run and you got some name recognition from that run and you got it, and somebody sent you an app and they said, hey, you can swipe left, swipe right on that app to look at different schools, and here's what these schools are offering.
And
I don't want to say any names, but one of these schools looks like a stunner, and the other one, not so much. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to go to the stunner. That's what it is. Why are we acting surprised by this? So mm-hmm. I think the exhaustion comes, he says, I'm exhausted. The exhaustion comes from you didn't prepare. Well, this was always coming. Mm-hmm. This was always coming down. And you're the head coach of the program. You see what these schools are doing now, SB. Mm-hmm. They're hiring general managers, right? Adrian Wojnarowski is the general manager of St. Bonaventure.
Really?
Yes.
You dropped the world bomb on me on that one. I didn't know that.
Yes. That's what they're doing. These schools are saying, hey, we have this pool of money, we have this pot of money or whatever it may be. Here's what we can afford in terms of paying players and bringing players in. The schools that were more forward thinking got out in front of it or tried to be right there with it. And if you didn't do that, that's I'm sorry, Jim Larranega. I don't feel sorry for you. And you're at Miami. It's Miami.
Yeah.
Why didn't you all prepare for this? When I know for a fact that the football program did. So why didn't the basketball program do the same thing?
And then why are you still holding on to the team name like this Miami? Like, that don't work no more in this age. Like, if Alabama football team can't keep nobody no more, then you ain't no, there's no holds barred for no school.
Yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah. Now, and again, this is not to, because again, I do understand from a coaching perspective, we just went on this run. You got to feel good if we just went on this run, went to the Final Four. That's a major accomplishment. Right, a team gets to the Final Four is a major accomplishment, but that doesn't sustain you. Mm-hmm. it just brings more attention. Mm-hmm. So, of course, if you're another school and you're saying, hey, Miami's got this kid, we really like him, they can only pay him $500,000. We could pay him $1 million. Well, where's the kid going to go?
Well, that million, yeah. And I'm going to start too. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm here. They need me.
So that's all I'm saying. Like, I think they're at a certain point, they need to, you have to own that this was always coming. If you didn't do that, that's not on anybody. That's on you. That's on your program. So you say you're exhausted. The exhaustion comes from you didn't prepare. And now you're trying, and now you realize you're well behind the power curve. That's your fault.
Mm-hmm. And my problem come into play, at, right? Coaches want people to feel sorry for them right now with the NIL stuff going on. Like you said, you didn't prepare. College sports has just become professional. It's professional sports now. Your program needs to move like it's a professional program. You can't rely on your school names, can't rely on past champions. You can't do that no more. You have to treat it like a business. You treat it like a business plus your school name, that's a double plus. But also, coaches, when you bring another guy in to take a player place, all the players just got to sit there and just be like, oh, okay, accept it. Now, I mean, nowadays they can just leave now. But back in the day, we had guys on a scholarship, and next thing you know, you end up surprisingly get this recruit. You done lied to this one kid already and told him, hey, man, you know, you're going to be this guy, and you end up swiping a five-star. And now you got to tell the guy that you done been lied to his mom and everything. Oh, yeah, now, well, you got to accept your role. You got to accept it. It's just part of the game, brother. It's that's all it is. It's part of the game now. Everybody has to go through it. It's a business. You got to take it for how it is, take it spade to spade, and you have to move how the game's supposed to be played. It's not checkers no more with college sports. It's chess now. You got to strategize. You got to find ways to keep people. You got to find ways to keep that money. Or you got to know where the player interest is. Or you need to be prepared to have a backup plan just in case a player wants to leave. You have to be prepared. So, like you said, I don't feel it sucks. And it don't suck because at the end of the day, the players are getting paid. And this is something, like you said, you prepare for. If you can't keep nobody in Miami, I don't know what else can you keep somebody at. And they're getting paid, a young 19, 20, 21-year-old young man in Miami and get money, no matter, like, you could double up the money. But it's still Miami, too, though. But if you lose the players like that, that's like you said, that's on you. I don't know what else you want to do. What else? I think, honestly, if you are a coach, any coach from that past era mindset, you might as well just go ahead and leave it. Leave it now. Leave college sports now. You see Nick Saban got up out of there for a reason.
Right, and I think some of it was, again, what they were ultimately had to do is change how the program operated. Mm-hmm. Well, if the program operates in the space that the head coach is the alpha and the omega, well, that's probably not going to sustain you long term. So, again, you see college football programs bringing in GMs. Bill Belichick has a GM, Mike Lombardi, at UNC. Andrew Luck is the GM of football at Stanford. So that's the model, but also you have to have an operating budget.
Yep.
And the operating budget is not just to pay coaches. The operating budget now is how much can we afford to pay players?
Players.
And again, where I think, again, where college football is going to eventually, and I'm saying college sports in general, is eventually going to have to go. If you want some level of parity, there's got to be some level of regulation around it. From the NCAA to AA level, and that hasn't necessarily happened yet. It's basically these schools saying, here's individually how we can operate, and this is what we can do. But there are some schools that know they can't compete with the Alabamas. They can't compete with the Ohio's. They can't compete with the, I'll just say, the USC's of the world. It's just a different, a different animal. So that's where I think where things have to trend if this is, again, just going to continue to be an issue.
And like, and then also to that point, they got to put like, you got to start treating it like a contract then. Hey, man, look, I'm going to sign you to a 2-year X amount of year. Because me as a young man, as a young athlete, right? I go to the University of Miami. All right, sir, we're going to give you $500,000 for NIL this year. I ball out. We go far. Ring, ring, ring. Hey, this UCLA. I like how you balled out of there. We're going to give you $1 million this year. I'm going to go get the million. I'll ball out again. Man, I could possibly go to the league. Well, I'm close there, but man, I want to stay in college. Ring, 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 ring. Hey, this this Michigan State. Hey, look, how much you getting paid over there, UCLA? One. All right, we're going to give you 1.5. I'm going to go over there and get the money. And I'm starting, they saying they need me. I'm going to go over there, and especially if I'm one of the players like that. Because there's not no regulation on when I can leave. I'm always going to take the higher money every year, pay raise.
And can I say this, SB? What is the difference in 8 players jumping in the transfer portal and leaving for more money versus 8 players saying, hey, we want to turn pro, whether it's to go to the NBA, yeah, go to overseas? What's the difference?
Same thing.
So at a certain point, again, where was the preparation?
Or why are coaches care about how players move around now? Do you care about the players when you get that job offer, when you go lead them and go to the league? You ain't think about the kids then? No, you took the better opportunity. Ain't nobody boo-hoo sad. Hey, no, I understand. It sucks that you leave, but hey, I can't deny you, young man. You ain't never seen that much money like that. I'm 20 years old. Somebody offered me $1 million to play for that school, and they said they need me, and I'm going to be a heavy part of the rotation. Oh, yeah, I got to go there. I'm gone. I'm going. Right. I'm going. Gotta do it. On to the next story, though, Sean. We gotta go switch up to the gridiron. Browns reconstruct Deshaun Watson contract to assure that he will be there through at least 2026. Provides cap flexibility once it has expired. I'm actually shocked that he did this. So, what do you think the conversation was? Like, hey, man, if you don't restructure the contract, we might possibly cut you. We're just hold the salary, or did Deshaun Watson walk in the office and say, hey guys, you know, I know you gave me a fully guaranteed contract, but I wasn't playing good, so you know, I give the team a tax cut, you know what I'm saying, a break. What do you think the true conversation was?
So the restructure really doesn't help Deshaun Watson, it helps the Browns.
Yes.
He still gets his money though. He still is going to get the $92 million left guaranteed he has left on his deal. Mm-hmm. What I think part of the restructure was, hey, listen, you know, and again, I think part of it is they're not guaranteeing Deshaun Watson anything except that he'll get that money. Whether he's on the roster or not is, I think, inconsequential. I think what they're ultimately saying is we're not guaranteeing you anything. We need to do this restructure because we got to fix this roster. We got to improve this roster. We have a lot of work to do with this roster, and their cap situation said that they needed to do this. Mm-hmm. But I do think two things. One, I think obviously they're going to be in the quarterback market this offseason, whether mm-hmm. again, and the quarterback market is not necessarily they're going to go out. The quarterback market is, hey, we're going to open up, or we have a quarterback competition going into the next offseason, and may the best man win. So they weren't guaranteeing Deshaun Watson mm-hmm. anything in terms of play or what his role would be. But this restructure does help them, mm-hmm. not just in the short term, but obviously once that deal expires, as the headline says. That's mm-hmm. all. It's just – and again, everybody thought it was highly unlikely that he would be elsewhere next season. This, I think, again, helps the Browns ultimately, you know, try to field a better roster than they did this year going into next season.
Do you think there's a smart move for Deshaun Watson to do this or no?
I mean, he's still getting his money. It's just different. It's just different. Yeah.
Okay. Because I was saying, yeah, as long as you get that money, you better not turn that down, Deshaun. You better not turn that down and get every penny, brother, because you ain't going to get no contract this big. NFL legend Eric Dickerson does not want Saquon Barkley to break his single record. Dickerson was also quoted about talking about it, saying he don't want to break it, and he's not tripping over that Saquon got an extra game to do it. I know you have been feeling the way about the extra game when it comes to stats, because I know you feel like we should start looking at stats different because of the extra games that come in. But and shout out to E2, because no Hayden Man said with it. He was all love. He said he's still rooting for him, but of course he said, no, I don't want him to break it at all. So do you think Saquon Barkley will break the record? I think he's like 260 yards away. So he got to at least get that in the next two games, which is highly possible. Do you think he's gonna break the record? And then what was your reaction to Eric Dickerson saying he don't want Saquon to break his record?
Well, the Eagles won't have Jalen Hurts this week. He's out this week. So Kenny Pickett will be starting. I think it all just depends. Now, again, I think he got a better chance, depending on how many yards he gets on Sunday, going, you know, and playing the Giants last week of the season, because the Giants stink, to break it. But it all depends on what he does this week against the Cowboys. I think if he has, say, 90 yards, and he's that would put him at 170 yards, mm-hmm. I think it'd be very difficult to do that. And also, if you're the Eagles, the primary thing is not Saquon breaking the record. As much as you'd like him to break the record, the primary thing is him being healthy going into the playoffs, because they're not getting the number one seed, which means they won't have a bye week. So he's got to be ready to play wild card that next weekend as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all going to be organic. I don't know if he can break it. The Cowboys have been playing better as of late, obviously. So I don't think they're not a pushover. But, you know, I think it's all going to depend. And also, I think the other thing, too, is without the run threat of Jalen Hurts on Sunday, it's going to put more on Saquon. You know, how are the Cowboys going to defend that? I think that's all going to factor in whether or not he breaks it. In terms of Eric Dickerson has always said he does not want the record broken. It's something he enjoys. Eric Dickerson has two records. He has that single season record, but he also has the rookie rushing record, which I don't think will ever be broken.
It's like, how much you broke? 1,800?
Like 1,800 plus yards. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh,
yeah. Like his first 2 years were ridiculous. Like he was, I mean, just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But they ran him to death those first 2 years. Well, while he was the Rams anyway. So I understand his point. You know, it's something he's proud of. It's a badge of honor. But he's not rooting for him. It's just, you know, he said if he breaks it, he breaks it. But he's not rooting. He's not actively rooting for him. Well, he didn't do that with Adrian Peterson 12 years ago. He wasn't actively rooting for Adrian Peterson to break the record. And Adrian Peterson got close.
Yeah, he got close.
He was 9 yards short. So, you know, I think I'm not mad with Eric Dickerson. He's always kept the same energy about it. And also, he acknowledged the additional game, but he's also acknowledged that he had two additional games to break the record that was set by O.J. Simpson. So, you know, my thing, and I've said this to USB, and I've said this again, to me, it shouldn't be about the total yards. To me, it's the yards per game. That's that's the record for me.
Yeah. Who got the most yards per game in a football game, if you know
what I'm talking about? In a season?
Or just one game, period. Or in the season, yeah, regular season.
Well, most yards per game in a game is Adrian Peterson. He had 296 in one game against the Chargers.
Nobody had a 300. Nobody never had a 300 rushing game ever.
No.
That'd be crazy when that happened.
Yeah, no, because Walter Payton had the record for a long time. He had 275, I believe, in a game, and then Corey Dillon, I think, had 278, and I believe it was Adrian Peterson that he had. Was 295, 296, I think was the record. But
that's ridiculous.
But the most rushing yards or the rushing yards per game for a season is O.J. Simpson in 1973. He actually, I think, 143 yards per game that season.
143 yards per game is like OD. That's ridiculous, bro.
Yeah.
Well, we got to wait and see. We're going to see if Saquon do it. Next story. Charlotte, let's take the league on this one. Kirk Herbstreit criticized Chicago Bears quarterback Caleb Williams.
So if you watched the game last night, the Seattle Seahawks and Chicago Bears, which Seattle won 6-3.
It was awful, by the way.
It was a barn burner of a game. Kirk Herbstreit, who calls the game with Al Michaels, made a comment about was talking about Caleb Williams, and he essentially, you know, said that, you know, he said, you know, Caleb Williams does some amazing things and blah, blah, blah. But he said, I think the thing that remains to be seen and only time will tell is if he, Caleb Williams, understands what it takes to be an NFL quarterback as far as the preparation, as far as first guy there, last guy leaving. And I'm not suggesting that he's not not doing those things, but just all of those little things that really make quarterbacks special. That's a very, very dangerous, very, very dangerous rhetoric, right? Because first of all, Kurt Herbstreit, who have you heard that from? That he doesn't prepare and that he's not putting in the work.
Why would you make that statement and then in the next paragraph say, I'm not for sure 100% that he'll do it. So why are you throwing it in the air?
Right. I mean, talking loud and saying nothing. 100%. So I want people to understand something, right? So and there was a study done by Deadspin in 2014 in which the text from scouting reports by NFL.com, CBS, and ESPN were analyzed. And scouting reports, again, if y'all know, the scouting reports are things that are written up about individual players. The word smart popped up 6.3 times per 10,000 words for white players and 2.32 times per 10,000 words for black players. The word intelligent was seen 2.48 times per 10,000 words for white players and only 0.67 times for black players. The word athletic was used 82 times for white players and 221 times for black players. There were 203 word uses of the word speed describing white players and 878 for black players. The word struggle showed up 17 times for white players and 56 times for black players. Among some of the most commonly used words for white players, tough, effort, leader, toughness, intangibles, consistent, overachiever, smart, instincts, learn. Among some of the most commonly used words for black players, athlete, athletic, productive, physical, explosive, dynamic, inconsistent, aggressive. What Kurt Herbstreit did last night was continue to add to the dangerous narrative that has always surrounded black quarterbacks. I don't dislike Kurt Herbstreit, so I want to be very clear when I say this. I don't dislike Kurt Herbstreit. I'm not sure he should be calling NFL games, but that's another conversation in itself. But I don't dislike Kurt Herbstreit. The problem I have is a lot of times it doesn't compute for people like Kurt Herbstreit and Troy Aikman's and the others. When you use certain words when referring to a player, you're pushing stuff that they've been saying for 40, 50, 60 years. The stuff that I heard growing up about Doug Williams and the Warren Moons and the Randall Cunninghams of the world. And so that's where it gets dangerous. And that's why he's getting the criticism, deservedly so. It's dangerous. It's disgusting. And it's got to stop.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at that, and you brought this up during the pre-show. Where was the same energy for Trevor Lawrence when he was going through a bad rookie season? Oh, because the coaching was bad. And you see Caleb Williams in a situation where his coach is gone. Just like that. Where's that same energy for that? And then why are you heavily criticizing a guy who's a rookie in his rookie year? One of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Peyton Manning was god-awful his rookie year. You can't judge nobody off one season body of work at the end of the day. You cannot get the truth. Even C.J. Stroud, which I thought was the MVP because how great he looked. You still couldn't judge how good C.J. Stroud was going to be out that 1 year body of work. We done seen players have terrible years, then next year go through the roof. We seen players have outstanding years and next year go to the gutter. But to the point of the things that he was alluding to, where my problem come into play at. Now you question the effort that he put in, his leadership. Like, what has Caleb Williams shown that you had to question it? Actually, how god awful his team is, he actually overachieved. He broke the record or rookie record for the longest throws completed or throws without an interception. And he threw, and one of them was the interception he threw was pretty much trying to win the game, desperation pass at the end of the game. So if you really want to look at what Caleb Williams, if you want to question all this thing, effort, leadership, if you want to add intelligence on this, just we want to break up the words. Actually, he's got one of the highest ones for a rookie. If he ain't throwing no interception, and clearly he understanding what he's supposed to go out there and do, but there's only so much you can do when you don't have a coach and don't have an O-line. But we don't bring that up. But if any other quarterback, you know, with the situation where we gave a player a pass, and I hate to throw Mr. Lawrence in his fire, but when his coach was out clubbing and the team wasn't doing, we gave him a pass because he understand the bad situation they was in. Oh, yeah. But I didn't hear none of this his rookie year. And I think, like you said, we got to get back to the point. And I think we need to start calling people out. Nothing against Mr. Herb Street there. But if you step in, you step in that kitchen, in the wrong kitchen, you're going to feel the heat. And you better be prepared to take it because you shouldn't even put yourself in that line of fire and scoping. Get yourself scoped like that. If you're going, let me make sure I say this correct because I don't want to even go that far too. But if long story short, if you put yourself in that position, you got to take what comes with it at the end of the day. And you also, if you're going to be like that, keep the same energy with everybody. Because I'm tired of the narratives over black quarterbacks, especially with Lamar Jackson, too. They called my man a running back at the beginning of his career. Now he's actually one of the best quarterbacks, best passing quarterbacks in the league, if not the best passing quarterback in the league. Do I see anybody, and this is what I wanted to really say, Sean. Do I see anybody coming back and backtracking, not even backtracking, coming up forefront saying I was wrong? Why do we don't get into that, though, right? Okay, you said what you said. So now I want Mr. Herb Street, when it's shown that Caleb Williams is the first person there, last person leaving. Oh, he showed his leadership skills. He already showed his touch of fear. I want her keep the criticism as loud, keep the criticism how loud you had, and make sure that apology is even louder. That's all I want. If y'all do that, go ahead. Because I'd rather for you to show your true colors and say how you truly feel. But just know when you wrong, I want you to stand right in front of that camera. Make sure it's a solo shot. Make sure it's on you and say I was wrong. And apologize to that man. That's all. That's all I want, Sean. If anything, just how loud the criticism is, I need to see. Like, everybody was on that scout. I'm still waiting on everybody. When we go back to that scouting report with Lamar Jackson, where all of them was telling him change position. You can't throw the ball this, and that. I want every one of them to be in the forefront. Keep that same energy. I was wrong. But we got to keep going. Because that's going to open up a whole other Pandora box. And I was trying my best to keep it PG as much as I could. Tom Brady, obviously, he got minor ownership with the Las Vegas Raiders. Tom Brady will advise Raiders head coach decision with Antonio Pierce, which he is on the hot seat at the moment. Sean, why don't we just – how is Tom Brady getting all these jobs but not having the job title so he can avoid all this? Like, he pretty much just said he pretty much going to be the GM. He pretty much. So now if the GM – I'm just saying. If the GM guy who's sitting there right here say, hey, I'm just saying. I'm just using these names for example. Hey, man, I want to hire Bill Belichick. And Tom Brady going to the under, man, no, I don't think that's a smart decision. Go hire Pete Carroll. Who do you think the owner going to listen to? Who do you think the owner going to listen to? So you pretty much – Tom Brady, you pretty much – with this, you pretty much just saying Tom Brady to pretty much the GM. He goes, so he, if when Antonio Pierce get fired, Brady made the choice. That's all I'm saying. But what's your reaction to Brady being named the GM? He a owner, reporter, GM. Like, how is he getting all these jobs without the title?
I guess he got to, you know, rebuild that wealth after that divorce.
I thought she had more money, so I thought he was getting money. But
she didn't get some of that money.
I mean,
You know, she gave him, and she gave up part of her career for him. Please, she got paid. Yeah. Now I'll say this: you know, obviously, when they brought him in and sold him a piece of the franchise, that was to obviously, you know, pump some more money into the franchise, but also that, you know, Mark Davis wants to build a winner, and he hasn't been able to do that, you know, since his father's passing. And the Raiders were a mess before even Al Davis passed away. Not surprising that Tom Brady's going to have some input on not just if what happens with Antonio Pierce, but also what do they do, you know, with the quarterback position, things of that nature. Now, there's a great friend of Tom Brady who's out there available by the name of Mike Vrabel.
Mike Vrabel. Mm-hmm. I would be shocked if he get that job. I would be shocked. I mean,
the questions are going to come down to, should the Raiders move on from Antonio Pierce after one season? I don't know if they should.
I'm going to say this. I actually like Antonio Pierce. I don't want him to, but from what I just seen with the Bears situation, if you're going to bring a new quarterback in, you might as just bring a new coach in too.
But that would be the primary reason why, right, I would remotely consider doing it.
Yeah.
Is just that. Mm-hmm. And again, I do think there's some credence to that.
It's crucial, yeah.
Now, they won last week, so they've dropped in the draft position, but it doesn't mean that they won't be able to get back up to get whoever it is they may that, want. That now, obviously, you know, every game, we'll see what happens. And also, mm-hmm. Is there a situation where one of these two young quarterbacks essentially says, tell that other team, don't draft me. Mm-hmm. Do not draft me.
But also the Browns are in the way too now.
Well, I mean, again, I think the Browns are going to be they're a little different in their situation, just because, again, I still think they believe they can make the Deshaun thing work. Whether it does remains to be seen, but I still think they believe that.
We're talking about the GM, Sean, though. If you was a Browns, Cam Ward right there at 4. You ain't taking them. Cam Ward, right there at 4. You ain't taking them.
But the problem is they have so many other needs. I'm not a big believer in you just take a position. I think you there are times when you take the best talent available.
That's understandable.
And for them, they are bereft of talent. The offensive line was not very good this year. Obviously, they had some issues on their defense.
Yes, they did.
They went from the number one ranked defense to the 21st ranked defense. So that tells me that they got some personnel things they need to clean up. Mm-hmm. If there's a person on your board higher, because again, to me, one of their big issues is their left tackle, Jedrick Wills, has been out and has been in and out and hasn't been healthy, And so what do you do there? Because I think that's as important as having a quarterback. So I'm just saying that they got a lot of other organizations' decisions to make. And again, I don't know if necessarily getting a rookie quarterback is going to fix their issues. They got some other issues they need to clean up first. So we'll see.
Now, the next thing, this is what I was just saying, like Tom Brady, maybe just like, I guess, when you just the GOAT, you just do whatever you want to do. Go ahead and say, quote for Sean, but the GOAT for me, a quarterback. Also, amidst of him being a owner in the team, minor owner in the team, broadcaster, I say reporter, or I call him reporter. Tom Brady is not reporting nothing. Broadcasters. Now he's a GM. Also, Sean, Tom Brady has a vote for the NFL award. So, bad with him being part on with the Raiders, because I can't wait for the drama unfold on this one. Because I just want to see, right? Let's play how we thought the awards was gonna go. I mean, the draft is gonna go. Shador goes to the Raiders. Cam Ward probably goes to like the Giants or something. Neck and neck year, and anybody could really win. Everybody making a good case for whatever side, and Shador wins it. The first thing they're gonna bring up, because Tom Brady got the vote, and they gave it to. I can't wait for the drama unfold with some Raider winning an award, and it's gonna be a close race. But that's different conversation for something else. But how wicked is it, though, that Tom Brady has a vote while he's part owner of a team? And he's broadcasting. And he's GMing. How is he doing all this, bro?
Well, because he is a member of the NFL media, he does have a right to vote. Now, they did release a statement basically saying, hey, that we expect all of our voters to be fair and to be, unbiased in their voting. The primary reason why it's an issue this year is because Brock Bowers is having has probably had the best rookie season of a tight end ever. I know in terms of receptions, definitely has. I'm not sure about touchdowns, but so, you know, will Tom Brady vote for him for, you know, offensive rookie of the year? And again, I don't think Brock Bowers is going to win offensive rookie of the year. I think we pretty much know who that's going to be at this point.
I think they might give him AFC offensive rookie, though.
It'd be Jaden Daniels.
You think so? No. Brock Bowers
I'm saying just offensive rookie of the year.
It's offensive rookie.
Yes, NFL office, not conference specific.
You don't think you'll get the Bo Nix? Because I know Jaden Daniels did just go off that last game with that comeback.
Yeah, no. Bo Nix is no. No, he's not touching Bo that. Not touching that. No. It's Jaden Daniels. So, okay. Yeah. So I just think that's where it's become an issue. But honestly, SB, I think it's a mountain out of a molehill at the end of the day. You know, Tom Brady's going to vote for who he votes for. His vote will not sway other people's votes or anything like that. He's going to vote how he sees fit, and that's it. There are a lot of voters. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, we're going to see how it goes. Last story before we get to our picks of the week. RIP to the late, great legend. Ricky Henderson, prayers to the Henderson family. I will just keep it short and brief on that. Prayers to Ricky Henderson and his family. What about you, Char?
So, you know, Ricky Henderson was born in Chicago. He grew up in Oakland, but he was born in Chicago.
Great Chicago, by the way. You know, we just birth from it. We see you somewhere, and then you just go be great, and then the other place try to claim you. No, he's from Chicago. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Michael Jordan being from New York. You know, it's kind of the same thing. But
no, I mean, North Carolina. I mean, they claim Carolina really claimed the boy.
But in all seriousness, no, Ricky Henderson. When you talk about ahead of his time, in terms of the analytic player, he was the pre-analytic player, but he could do everything. You know, he could hit for power. He could hit for average. Obviously, we know he's the career stolen bases leader. Has the most. We went crazy over Shohei Ohtani's 50-50 season this year. Ricky Henderson had 130 stolen bases in one season.
That's ridiculous. I ain't gonna hold you.
130 stolen bases in one season. He's the career all-time leader in runs, unintentional walks, and leadoff home runs. And he was someone who played. We talk about, you know, LeBron playing well into his 40s. Ricky Henderson played well into his 40s and was still productive. The crazy thing with Ricky Henderson, he never really officially retired. Teams just stopped calling because he was the person who always felt like he could still do it. Obviously known for, you know, his time mostly as an Oakland A, that they have his number retired. And he went to Hall of Fame as an Oakland A. Being a Yankees fan, remember Ricky Henderson playing for the Yankees when I was a kid. And it was like a crazy lineup because it's like Ricky Henderson, Don Mattingly, Dave Winfield. Like, you're talking like Hall of Famers at the top of the order of that lineup. And Ricky Henderson was the leadoff guy. And people talk about his quirkiness and, you know, he talking in the third person and things like that. But they most people say he's the most genuine person you ever met. Mm-hmm. How Ricky was in front of the camera is how he was behind the camera. He was just like that with everyone. So
also, Sean, it's funny that you brought that up about like how he never really tied teams to stop calling because he always felt like he could do it and he being a genuine person. I didn't notice. I was talking with my friends about like Ricky Henderson, like baseball a lot. He told me about the $1 million story. You know about the $1 million check story?
Yes.
So Ricky Henderson, if y'all don't know this, I'm going to tell the story real quick. Ricky Henderson got his first $1 million check. Man, didn't have no money like that at the time. First $1 million check. He framed it, never spent it at all. To this day, I think recently they made him count, or they did it like after he passed, which would be kind of bogus. But he never cashed his $1 million check over the years. Never cashed it. Kept it framed. Cause they asked Ricky, "Hey Ricky, why you ain't cash?" He said, "I got this. There's more millions to come." To this day, it was framed. The Oakland A's was like, "Bro, Our check balance, our book is off $1 million something. Please, can you get Ricky? Please, can you get Ricky to cash the check? So I believe they took it out and got it framed. And since they had got it, I guess they gave him another one, just like the exact one. But that is a true funny genuine story. I don't know if I could have $1 million and just leave it on the wall. I don't care if I know how much more. Cause I need my money today. What they say, it's my money and I need it now. I need my money now, ASAP. I can't deal with it. That's funny though.
And again, you know, when people talk about one of one, he was one truly one of one. There's nobody like him. Mm-hmm. Just nobody like him. He was a different animal, different breed, but he understood the value of, you know, getting on base. And again, we talk about Moneyball and analytics and stuff like that. Ricky Henderson was that before there was even a definition for it and a way to quantify it the way that it's quantified now in baseball. Mm-hmm. He was that beforehand. If you look at just, if you go back and you look at his career, just some of the advanced stats that we use now, Ricky Henderson blows them all out of the water. And I don't say this lightly. If you say if Ricky Henderson, for a lot of people, is one of the 10 greatest baseball players ever,
I'm going to admit that.
That's not a slight to anybody else. Mm-hmm. He was just that good. And I mean, he was like that. I mean, and watching him, like, when he was steal bases, I mean, he was, you knew it was coming and you still couldn't stop him for the most part. So just, you know, RIP to the great Ricky Henderson, a man ahead of his time, a player ahead of his time, and certainly will never be forgotten.
Definitely never be forgotten. Sean, it's almost time to get up out of here, but before we get up out of here, it's the favorite time of the show because it's Friday.
SB and Sean, NFL Picks of the Week.
And Sean, it's slowing down, man. We're going to have to start doing NBA Picks of the Week now, man, or something.
We still got playoffs.
But, all right, what we got for this week?
So, SB, just a reminder, we didn't go over the picks last week. You did win last week. So you were up one game. So it's 8-7-1.
Woo, we bet,
SB
baby.
Is up, but we got 2 weeks left in the regular season. Mm-hmm. 13 games to pick from, as 3 games have already been played for week 17.
Yes.
3 key matchups this week, but we're going to get to our other 10 matchups first. So the first game, triple header tomorrow on NFL Network. First game, LA Chargers at the New England Patriots.
You already know we're going to go one way, both up. I ain't going to pick against my Chargers.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Chargers. I think it's going to be a little bit of a defensive struggle, but I'm going to take the Chargers in New England by 7.
Okay.
Next game, Arizona at the LA Rams.
I'm taking LA at home. The Cards would be too wishy-washy for me. And I got to check the playoff pitches. I think they just got eliminated from the NFL.
The Cardinals have officially been eliminated. The Rams and Seahawks are still fighting for the division. So the Rams do need to win this game to maintain half-game lead over the Seahawks.
I'm taking the Rams at home.
I'm going to take the Rams at home in that one as well. Arizona, again, you mentioned too wishy-washy. Do expect them to be competitive, but I'm going to take the Rams at home by 4. Next game, Indianapolis Colts at the New York Giants.
Oh, God. The Giants are not trying to win the game. They are tanking. They're going to do the opposite of the Raiders doing. They're going to make sure they lose this game. So we're going to take the Colts. Colts come in and get this dub.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Colts by 7 in New Jersey as well. Like you mentioned, Giants are not trying to win a game, trying to hold on to that first pick. So take the Colts by 7. Next game, New York Jets at the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, man. The Kansas City Chiefs already secured the number 1 seed, so they locked it down.
Correct.
It's locked. I want to pick the Bills. But the only thing is that I'm questioning is if they're gonna sit anybody.
They wouldn't do that this week. I think that'd be next week, depending on where things are. Buffalo does still have to fight to hold on to that second seed. right now because the Ravens are right there behind them. Mm-hmm. And if they finish tied, I think the Ravens will get the second seed. So Buffalo does need to win to secure the second seed.
With that being said, I'm taking Buffalo then, by the way.
Yeah, I'm taking the Bills as well. But again, divisional game. Mm-hmm. I do expect it to be a little close. Jets are still, crazy as it sounds, they're actually still trying to compete. So I'm going to take the Bills at home by seven as well.
Okay.
Next game. Las Vegas Raiders at the New Orleans Saints.
Ooh, wait. Well, I know you're not picking against your Saints. This ain't a team that I will pick for. So I'm actually picking your Saints this time. I'll pick your Saints this week. The Raiders actually lose the game, Raiders. Lose the game.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Saints at home by two.
Hmm.
After that Monday night debacle.
Watch y'all lose to the Raiders. Watch y'all lose. The one time I pick y'all, watch y'all.
Man, I don't want to talk about it. Next game. Let's go. This next game is very interesting. I've been considering this one, but this next game, Carolina Panthers at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Carolina is going to be a little bit way better next year. I like how they've been playing since Bryce Young has returned to the lineup, but with the playoff thing going on, the Buccaneers are trying to make a late push. I got the Buccaneers winning this game. I'm going Big Baker. But I would not be shocked because if you do not come to play, the Panthers will beat you.
Buccaneers have to win this game. They have to win this game. They're actually not in the playoff picture right now. They're in the hunt. But Atlanta has the tiebreaker, so Atlanta has that seed over them right now.
Mm-hmm. Who are you picking?
You know what? Just for kicks and giggles, I'm going to take Carolina just to be different.
And watch they win. I can see them winning, bro. I'm not doubting the Panthers no more.
I'll tell you this. That Panthers-Tampa game in Carolina a few weeks ago, Carolina should have won that game. There were a couple moments in that game that I thought were really questionable, but we're not going to talk about that.
Okay. And you see, the team has been bonding. You've seen Xavier Leggett, but not in the locker room getting people coon, giving people that raccoon and stuff.
Yeah. Listen, I don't want to talk about,
country boy to the soul. Shout out to Xavier Leggett, bro. Him and Jameis Winston is like NFL national treasures, dog. I swear, bro. Just a compilation of them two. That'll make my day, bro.
Oh, man. Next game, Tennessee Titans at the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I'm taking what's the name still? Is Trevor Lawrence still out?
Yeah, he's out for the season.
Will Levis still eat mayonnaise in his drinks and stuff, right, don't he?
I believe Mason Rudolph is starting for them.
Golly, this is the who you picking? I don't want to pick nobody.
I'm taking Tennessee.
All right, for kicks and giggles, and I know I'm gonna regret it, I take the Jaguars. Lockie and Mac Jones.
Yeah,
we got next season. We probably gotta add like a negative pick or something.
This is the toilet bowl game. Honestly, because I don't see it. But
we should give a one flush token a week. If it's a toilet game, we can just flush. We gonna add the flush game of the week.
if you can get the sound effect, then we can do it.
All right, I got you. Say less. Look, that's all I need to hear.
All right. Next game. Playoff implications in this game. Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles need to win to lock up the NFC East.
Uh-oh.
And no Jalen Hurts for Philadelphia. Kenny Pickett starting at quarterback.
The Dallas Cowboys picked the wrong time of the season to actually play good. But they still got Saquon Barkley there. I'm going to go with the Eagles. Very close game. This game is going to be a very close game. I'm going to take the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Eagles. Eagles by six. I think the Eagles coming off of the game last week in Washington, a little upset They weren't able to pull that one out. They're back home. Mm-hmm. They know what they got to do. I expect the Eagles defense to play one of the best games of the season. No CeeDee Lamb for the Cowboys. He's out for the season as well. So I'm taking the Eagles by 6.
Tiff, I can't bet on them Cowboys no more, Tiff. Every time they failed me. They failed me.
Next game, Miami Dolphins at the Cleveland Browns.
The Browns out. Dolphins, I think it's Dolphins out. Yeah, no, Dolphins still in the race. Even though I still think the AFC playoffs is set, even though the Chargers and Broncos are like still at the tail end. But I got the Dolphins winning this game over the Browns.
I got the Dolphins as well.
Matter of fact, what's the weather going to be in Cleveland during that time? Because the weather matters.
I don't know.
I'm going to stick Miami, but if it's cold, I wouldn't be shocked if Miami beat them. I mean, the Browns beat them.
Yeah, it's supposed to, you just see.
If it's snow, if it's snowing, I'm switching my pick. If it's snowing on the ground, I'm switching my pick right now.
Yeah, no, I'm taking Miami. I'm not confident in this pick, but I'm going to take the Dolphins as well. By 3. Last game before our key matchups. Monday Night Football should have been a key matchup, but not. Detroit Lions at the San Francisco 49ers.
Lions, we can move on. 49ers, it's time to pull the plug. Imagine pulling the plug right before you finna pay your quarterback a max. Gotta pull the plug.
Yeah. No, the Lions do need to win this game. Lions need to hold off. Potentially Minnesota for that one seed. So I'm taking the Lions in San Fran by 10. So now key matchups of the week.
Key matchups.
First key matchup, one of our games on Saturday. Denver Broncos at the Cincinnati Bengals. This game does have playoff replications.
My football man is telling me the Broncos are going to win. But division rivalry and my team is in the way of something going on. I'm taking the Bengals at home. I need the Bengals to get this win. So I'm going to take my vote with me too. So I'm taking the Bengals. My football man, they take Broncos. But I'm going to go with Joe Shiesty and Tiffany with me too. I'm taking the Bengals.
I'm taking the Bengals too.
Oh, okay. I'm taking
the Bengals too. I think the Bengals, they got to win this game to still stay in the playoff hunt. Mm-hmm. Because they do have to play, I believe, Pittsburgh to close the season in week 18. They go to Pittsburgh next week. They need this game to stay in the hunt. I'm going to take the Bengals over Denver just to make things a little interesting. So I'm going to take the Bengals at home. I'm going to take the Bengals at home by 4. Next key matchup. Green Bay Packers at the Minnesota Vikings.
This is going to be a great game, by the way. This is the battle of two teams who made their playoff spot, but they'll probably be fine. The Vikings, I think they're solidified at 5.
At 5, the Vikings can actually move up depending on what happens with Detroit. So it depends on what happens with Detroit. Yeah, they can still technically – win that one seed.
This is a 50-50 game. Who you taking?
I'm taking Green Bay.
You going Green Bay? I'll go Minnesota. I'll take Minnesota.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games Green Bay wants to win.
Yeah.
Both teams, potentially will have to go on the road, obviously, in the playoffs, in the wild card. I think Green Bay wants to win. Mm-hmm. This is their time to get hot.
Yes.
So I'm gonna take Green Bay and you took Minnesota.
Minnesota, yes. And Sean, when the playoffs finally get set, I want to have a conversation, right, about which of the NFC North teams is going to fall off next year because they play going to get their playoff schedule. Because we seen this before with the NFC lease. You know, they was the NFC beast that one year. They went right back to the NFC lease. So when the playoff season is set on that episode, I want to talk about which NFC North team is going to fall off when they get that playoff schedule.
I could answer that now, but we'll
wait. We'll wait. But, all right, one more game. What we got?
One last game, Sunday Night Football. Playoff implications here. Mm-hmm. Atlanta Falcons at the Washington Commanders.
Shout out Penix starting. I heard they might cut Kirk Cousins, which is crazy. Whoever Kirk Cousins is, we need to look him up, man. We need that boy. I need him, bro. That man is a finesse, bro. He going to get you paid, and you doing less work. Oh, man, that man, top dollar. But I'm going to take the Commanders to win it out.
This game is a must-win for Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta's got to find a way to win this game on the road. I do think this game could be a little bit of a shootout.
Oh, it's going to be.
I trust Atlanta's defense a little bit more than I do Washington's defense.
So I trust Washington's offense more than I trust Atlanta offense.
Well, the problem is you think about Atlanta offenses with Kirko Chains. Mm-hmm. Penny's played pretty well last week. Had a few drop passes.
Yeah.
One
to drop interception that wasn't his fault, Kyle Pitts. You got to lock in.
Yeah. Don't get me started on Kyle Pitts. Either Kyle Pitiful is what I would call it from now on, Kyle Pitiful. But that's it. I'm going to take Atlanta on the road in this one. And you taking Washington?
Yes, sir. I'm taking Washington.
All right. I'm going to take the Falcons in
the Commanders
in Maryland by 3.
All right. That's our pick. How many different games we picked this week? We got a couple.
We got quite a – we got 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 different games.
Four different games, okay. And we got a Monday game in there, so just in case it come, like, we need to switch it up. If it's, like, a tie one-off, we can do how we do.
Yeah.
All right, Sean, episode 29. Who you got? I already got my pick because we talked about him earlier.
That I'm sure. That was one of my picks right there. Yeah. This is, of course, the great Eric Dickerson. Another one, John Smoltz.
John Smoltz. Oh, I like that. I like that.
John Smoltz. Yeah, you know, shout out to John Smoltz, one of the best baseball broadcasters out there. And you know what? Let me go a little off the. Well, I don't say a little off, but one of the best safeties over the last 15 years. I don't know if he's going to get in the Hall of Fame or not, but Eric Berry.
Eric Berry, I like the Eric Berry pick. I'm going ED for sure. Eric Dickerson, since we talked about him earlier, got to show the running back love as always. And we appreciate you guys watching another great episode of Real Takes Over Faith Debates with SB and Sean Webb. I appreciate you guys sticking to it, listening to us. I know we missed Monday. I'm sorry I was under the weather, but we back at it. Tune in and make sure you guys listen and subscribe to all. Any Real Takes Over Fake Debates on any platform.
Let the lady tell. Real Takes Over Fake Debates has invaded the audio podcast world. Add Real Takes Over Fake Debates on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartMedia. Leave a 5-star review and comment below. New episodes every Monday and Friday.
Every Monday and Friday, like you told you. And so it's been SB, Sean Will, it's Real Takes Over Fake Debates, and we are out of here. Peace.